Joining me now is Dr. Peter McCullough, author of this brand new book, The Courage to Face COVID-19, subtitled Preventing Hospitalization and Death While Battling the Biopharmaceutical Complex. Dr. McCullough, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you as always. We're looking forward also to having you at our Ozarks conference with all these great speakers live in person in the middle of October. I know a lot of people are looking forward to shaking your hand, having you sign a book and get a picture with you.
Yeah, I can't wait. Matter of fact, I need to get your books to read on the way there. Your book sounds so relevant to what's going on today, Brandon. Very prescient. I just can't believe that comment I heard on the White House lawn today that you guys just showed. It's unbelievable.
It really is. By the way, we just did a tribute last night, tonight. We played one of the last videos of Dr. Zelenko. I know you guys were close friends. I know he talked about the fact, so I guess I'm not letting anything out of the bag, because he says that you and he were both very instrumental in trying to help President Trump when he was president and got COVID. So I'm assuming you guys worked very, very closely together from what I'm told, correct?
You know, initially we were making our discoveries separately, and then we came together. He had communicated directly with the White House and the Trump team. Peter Navarro separately had reached out to me on some more operational issues as we were trying to liberate hydroxychloroquine. It was directly being blocked by Rick Bright and Stephen Hahn, who ultimately went on to join the biopharmaceutical complex once they left their positions. Vladimir Zelenko was an innovator. He was fearless. He was absolutely a quintessential doctor who fulfilled his Hippocratic oath. A wonderful man, father, a man of faith, and he'll be greatly missed.
Absolutely, he will. Well, let's talk about your book. I got a nice signed copy. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And I just want to, first of all, ask, you do so many radio and TV interviews. Why did you want to take the extra effort with all your schedule and practice, everything you have going on? What made you want to take the time to put this in a book form?
I'm into my third year now providing commentary by invitation, commentary and analysis, as well as my original scientific publications on the pandemic. You know, in the first year of the crisis, I was a regular contributor by invitation to The Hill. Second year to America Out Loud Talk Radio, McCullough Report, and I still do that. I'm a frequent contributor on Fox. I was on this week on Laura Ingraham, but also Newsmax, OAN, Lindell TV, been on ABC. The shortcomings of all those efforts have been that it's presentation of scientific data in a very complex reality. What's going on now is extraordinarily complex. That's the reason why your books are so important, to really understand the framework of what's going on. So I teamed up with true crime best-selling author John Leake. John came from, he was originally from Dallas, but he was living in Vienna for a long time as a criminal investigator, a forensic expert. Yeah, he came out of Vienna to join me. We worked on the book for a year, and I can tell you, it reads in about two and a half hours to 3 hours. It's incredibly well written. John took the effort of interviewing. You know, we actually interviewed Vladimir Zelenko. We you know, spent a lot of time with him, Harvey Risch, so many of the hero doctors, so John could really understand what's going on. He was with me when I testified 5 hours of continuous U.S. Senate testimony on January 24th, 2022, the really now I think will be historic second opinion COVID-19 U.S. Senate panel. He was right there with me on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial when I gave my address to the crowd. And what John remarked is that, you know, it's a doctor that's come out of medical practice to, in a sense, a fight for civil liberties for Americans. What a time.
Yeah, absolutely. You start out the book talking about chapter one, the plague is coming. I mean, they told us it was coming, didn't they? They practiced it. They rehearsed for it.
They did. Now, looking back, you know, a foundational book probably to read in preparation for all this is Peter Bregan, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. It's a foundational book. It has every single piece of evidence to suggest this was all being mapped out. This was all being planned in a way.
And by the way, Dr. Peter Bregan, we just mailed his book out, Dr. Peter. We just mailed out Dr. Peter Bregan's book out to 2,000 influential families. My foundation just mailed that book to 2,000 influential families for free. They didn't even know it was coming. They didn't know. These are people that work closely with us, with what we do in our work, and they're leaders, and they're influential in their communities. And so we got 2,000 of those books, and we mailed it to 2,000 addresses for free because we felt that that book was so important. We might have to do that with your book as well.
But, you know, Bragan's book is important because we have to know the relationships. John Leake points out that, the Gates Foundation, when they joined forces with the World Economic Forum in 2017, they formed CEPI, or the Center for Epidemic Preparedness and Innovation. They poured billions of dollars into a newly formed unit, and they crafted a business plan. And the business plan said there will be pandemics, and we will respond to pandemics with vaccines. No treatments, nothing else, just worldwide mass vaccination. And they put dollar figures on this. This is stunning. You know, they thought it was worth $100 billion a year in revenue. I have to tell you, when I see the depths of corruption, the depths of planning, and through the context of a pandemic or a medical crisis, to basically start to what John describes as draining treasuries. There literally are just draining treasuries worldwide through this, in a sense, this new world order that's been ushered in through the context of a pandemic. You know, it's a fast read. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's 309 pages, 45 chapters, but the chapters are short. And John writes in such a fun manner. You can see one of the chapters in the end, Brandon. You'll love this one, Cuomosexuals.
Tell me about that, please. By the way, the print is a good size. Thank you for that as I get older.
Well, you know what, John points out, there were so many notable characters. We were seeing this on TV. Andrew Cuomo, former mayor of New York, you know, he won an Emmy for his marshalling in these daily press briefings and this command and control approach. And then he got caught up in this terrible situation where sick COVID patients were returned to nursing homes to infect more people in the nursing homes. And an untold calamity that happened in New York State nursing homes. And then, in a sense, almost as if there was a cover-up, suddenly these women came forward and there were allegations of sexual harassment. Before you know it, Cuomo is going down. After his Emmy, he actually leaves office disgraced, but he pulls down his brother, Chris Cuomo, the kind of over-pumped CNN coordinator who is always so juiced. He goes down as well. So John Leake is a fun writer. He's a historian. He's a philosopher. And he goes back and forth in history. Well, he points out, listen, this isn't the first time that these types of events have taken place worldwide.
And now we have Joe Biden in the last couple of weeks saying we need money for the next pandemic, as though he knows another one's coming. What do you make of that, Dr. McCullough?
You know, we're starting to see signs of this, this idea that one way to juice the flow of money, literally drain treasuries without any voting, without any budget reconciliation, is to declare these emergencies and sustain the emergencies. In 1976, the U.S. actually had an Emergencies Declaration Act that was largely designed to terminate emergencies. We had left open emergencies. I think we have about 37 emergencies open right now, but they're largely just sanctions against various countries, not really infectious disease emergencies. If you notice, the Biden administration just extended the state of emergency for the country. I just testified in the Texas Senate on Monday and inquired about that. Governor Abbott has actually extended the state of emergency. When there's a state of emergency, it gives extraordinary executive powers. We don't have to have budgets. We don't have to have voting or reconciliation or any types of audits. It's a free fall in terms of executive powers. And so it seems like the administrations now have literally become hooked on the power of emergency pandemics. And this idea that there's going to be another one coming, we've already seen a little practice, and that's been monkeypox. So with monkeypox, we know that, in fact, the CDC for a few years now has had a monkeypox response team, and things have been kind of gearing up for this. There's a company called Jynneos that has a live attenuated double-stranded DNA vaccine that should cover monkeypox and smallpox, although it's never actually been tested in a disease state. It's just been approved based on antibody rises. And there is a drug that actually works quite well called TPOX or Tecovirimat. And we know with monkeypox, it's basically a skin rash. It's an ugly skin rash with large pustules on the trunk, the arms, the legs, and the palms. Monkeypox has been around for decades. It comes out of the central Congo, where it spreads from monkeys to humans. We had an outbreak in 2003 when there were giant pouch rats from the Congo that were kept in close proximity to prairie dog pets. And in fact, it passed to humans. There was no deaths. There's about 1,000 to 1,500 cases a year worldwide. Last year, there was a case in Dallas. This guy from Africa, he went to Atlanta, all over Dallas. He was around all kinds of people. He didn't spread it to a single person. Doesn't spread very far. He's treated with TPOX and did just fine. And then suddenly in March of 2021, the Nuclear Threat Initiative, which is a think tank out of Washington, and the Munich Biosecurity Group have a tabletop exercise, guess what, to plan for monkeypox. And they have this theoretical plan that there'll be over 200 million deaths by a resistant strain of monkeypox. And they map out a timeline. And the release date for this, in a sense, this bioweapon was May 15th, 2022, just a week before the Davos meeting for the World Economic Forum and the WHO meeting, in order to establish authorities through this pandemic treaty, which fell through. I have to tell you, this whole thing seems so concocted. I know at least four occasions where these reports of monkeypox in the last month or so, they were actually fabricated. They were using old pictures that were coming out of textbooks decades ago.
Oh, wow. And do you think the next plandemic is going to be monkeypox, or do you see it being something more zombie-like to scare the living daylights out of people, like a hemorrhagic fever where you're bleeding through the nose and the eyes? I've interviewed Dr. Li Mingying twice. You know who I'm talking about, right? Used to, from China, talked about what she did, was with the WHO in Hong Kong, and I think she's now here in the U.S., but she has to be very careful because she's talking a lot about China. She has sources in China, and she's telling me that they were practicing, source in the air, that they're practicing infecting people with a hemorrhagic fever and working on a vaccine over there and rehearsing with this. Now, if that's to be believed, again, it makes us concerned. How concerned are you with some type of hemorrhagic fever where people are bleeding through the nose and the eyes? Because can you imagine? People would self-isolate then. You don't have to worry about lockdowns. You let that get out and people start being seen, they'll be more than happy to not go anywhere.
Yeah, I haven't analyzed that. Fortunately, that one hasn't gone too far. But the U.S. has already shown some signals. You know, in a knee-jerk reaction, they purchased 13 million doses of the unproven Jynneos vaccine. By the way, the Jynneos smallpox monkeypox vaccine also causes heart damage, myocarditis. They've already, in the trials, they've already had some men actually really get damaged with this stuff. And today it was announced the government bought some more. Now, Scott Gottlieb, former FDA chairman, now on the board of Pfizer, was actually discussing on CNBC what's called ring vaccination. So anybody who came in around somebody with monkeypox in a ring would take one of these unproven vaccines. I have to tell you, it's a skin rash. It's easily treated with an oral drug. We had a case in Dallas this summer, and he's been treated at home with TPOX. I wouldn't be taking a vaccine for a skin rash that could cause, the vaccine could cause heart damage. I think these are all these premonitory knee-jerk reactions. You know, Biden was on again saying he wants money. He wants more money for another pandemic, that there's going to be another pandemic. This foreshadowing is, I think, very alarming.
And, of course, it would probably time just in time for the election, right? And to keep pushing ballots and ballot voting and scare everybody away so they vote by absentee ballot, expand that more for fraud.
That's true. The timing of this, if this is true, that these, in fact, have been planned, and the Bregan book points out for SARS-CoV-2, almost it certainly was. You know, we highlight that in 2017, Johns Hopkins held a planning exercise called the SPARS pandemic. And they said it's going to be a coronavirus. It's going to be related to MERS and SARS. There's going to be confusion regarding drugs. And we're going to organize social media, mass media, the White House, and we're going to railroad and ramrod mass vaccination on the country. That was in 2017. Hopkins published their proceedings. They published two peer-reviewed papers. They were ready to go in terms of showing the Bloomberg School of Public Health, showing the death scoreboard right away. And then sure enough, this event 201 that was in 2019 that was filmed, they did the same thing. They literally mapped it all out. So you know that in March, in our book, we note several things. One of the things early in March, I mean, it was 5 days after President Trump declared a national emergency. 5 days afterwards, Moderna announced we have a vaccine and we're starting clinical trials. How do you get a vaccine in 5 days? I mean, there's absolutely no way. In Dallas, our county executive, our county judge, third most powerful person in the state, Clay Jenkins, in his initial declaration of emergency in the county, he said we must shelter in place, almost as if bombs are going out, and wait until there's a vaccine. Well, how did he know early in March that there was going to be a vaccine and that we would have to shelter in place? This is too contrived, Brandon. It's far too contrived.
Too planned. Yeah. I don't know if you know, I know you're in Texas, and I had an individual I interviewed the other night from Texas, Ernesto. Yeah. I don't know if you know Ernesto, have met Ernesto. He's testified, I think, for a committee for Senator Ron Johnson. We had him on the other night. Heartbreaking. I had him on with Dr. Sean Witcher with me. And Ernesto's son went and got the shot. He wanted to get the shot. The dad thought it was the right thing to do for both of them. It's his only son. He wanted to protect him, and he believed what he was being told. So he went out and got his son the shot. And his son was playing basketball and fell over dead. And, he was taken to the hospital. A police officer standing by performed CPR on him, but he was taken to the hospital, pronounced dead. And his heart, the dad said that his son's heart, during the autopsy, it was revealed that it was twice the size. And he reported that his son had the Pfizer shot. Here at our Worldview Report, my 30-minute nightly newscast, just straight news reporting, every night or every other night I'm reporting on a young, healthy teenager or someone in their 20s that either dies on a sports field or dies in their sleep.
Well, you know, I know Ernesto. I had a chance to review the autopsy. I'm a cardiologist. I have a lot of
So you reviewed the autopsy.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of experience in reviewing cardiac pathology in particular. There's no doubt his son died of fatal Pfizer vaccine-induced myocarditis. You know, the sad part of the story is Ernesto was actually questioning these vaccines. He took one himself first to see if it was safe, and then his son took one. And, you know, we've been studying this, and one of the questions I had from Joe Rogan, you know, I set all records on his podcast. I even beat Elon Musk. Elon Musk has a lot of money, but I guess I'm more interesting. I can tell you, Joe Rogan asked me a great question. He goes, listen, if these vaccines are so bad, how come everybody doesn't get damaged and die? And I said, well, it's a side effect. I mean, geez, if everyone, but when I thought about it more, and we've looked into this, it turns out this messenger RNA is very delicate. Probably every strand is a little different. The base pairs don't always line up. And they load it on these lipid nanoparticles. They have to super cool it. And it has all these various handling requirements. And in the clinical trials, they're using single-use vials, placebo or the real thing. Now they're using multi-use vials. The nurses are poking needles in them. The vials are out. You don't hear anything more about these super cool trucks. Millions of lots, by the way, have been returned to both Pfizer and Moderna because there's debris in the bottom and the manufacturing isn't good. My theory is a lot of people get a dud. They actually get where they don't get much installation of messenger RNA. Thank goodness, because of human error and manufacturing error, they don't really get a strong dose of the juice. But some people, like his son, tragically, get a brisk install of the messenger RNA. It codes for the lethal Chinese Wuhan spike protein, and the spike protein absolutely damages the heart. On my Twitter feed today is a cardiac pathology biopsy report from Germany. And it's clear the spike protein from the vaccine is in the heart and causing damage. In fact, they've identified for the first time these killer cells that respond to the spike protein. They're called giant cells. And this giant cell myocarditis is fatal. The reports of the two boys who died after Pfizer in Connecticut, the Gill paper published in Archives in Pathology, two boys aged 17 and 16, 3 and 4 days after Pfizer, found dead at home. They get autopsies. University of Michigan and University of Minnesota agree it is fatal, Pfizer vaccine-induced myocarditis. And the trigger actually may be catecholamines or adrenaline. That's what happened in Ernesto. So playing basketball, sports, it explains why a lot of these athletes have died. The interesting thing, though, is where is the parental outrage? Now, Ernesto, as a father, is outraged. But recently, we've heard about Democratic Congressman Sean Casten. Casten tweeted he was having his daughters vaccinated, his 12 and 17-year-old daughter vaccinated. He was pushing vaccines. And his 17-year-old daughter, now a few weeks later, found dead at home. And the eulogy message is that, you know, we need to treasure our time together. We never know if this is going to happen. Brandon, I'm a doctor. I'm in my fourth decade of doing this. I am telling you, every time this happens, the eulogy is typically a long battle with cancer, multiple heart surgeries, a heart transplant, kidney transplant, cystic fibrosis, a car accident. Not a healthy, perfectly healthy 17-year-old girl. I saw these pictures being found dead in her sleep. I'm telling you, I am so suspicious she died of the vaccine-induced myocarditis or a fatal blood clot.
Absolutely. All right, I've got like a minute and a half, but now we know that they are, and earlier tonight we played where Sesame Street's using Elmo to push shots to children, and they're calling for shots now for children as young as 6 months old, right, doctor?
You know, it is an outrage that this would be extended down to age 6 months, not medically necessary, not clinically indicated, no randomized trials showing benefit. 75% of kids have already been through it by the CDC, and we have no assurances this is safe long term.
And what do you think? I mean, I think it was Dr. Steve Kirsch that put out a Substack that he thinks there's 750,000 dead now from this. What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm going right now with the World Council for Health, which June 11th put out an official pharmacovigilance report. They want a global recall just from the 40,000 deaths that the public health agencies admit to. The U.S. toll could be as high as what Colombia thinks, 187,000 Americans through December.
What's the website to get the book? What is it?
CourageToFaceCOVID.com.
CourageToFaceCOVID.com. CourageToFaceCOVID.com. It's a great read. It's big print, so it's easy to read, which I love that, getting older. But it's a great read. I've been reading the chapter titles and flipping through it. I've had it a couple days, folks. Excellent book. I highly recommend it. CourageToFaceCOVID.com. CourageToFaceCOVID.com. Thank you, Dr. Peter. We look forward to having you in the Ozarks the middle of October.
See you then.
Thank you, Dr. Peter. Folks, I hope you'll check it out. Dr. Peter McCullough, CourageToFaceCOVID.com. Great read. Also, buy one for a friend. Buy it for a skeptic and give it to them. Take care.